We are, yes. Hello, sir.
Hello, Mr. Chair, Mr. Budget Committee Chair.
Hello, Mr. Executive Director. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
It is great to see you all in person. I mean, while I really enjoy teleconferencing and phone calls, it's nice to see you in person, even if it is the last time that we're able to see each other before the end of the world. Hey, Lovett, how are you?
Wait, how many do we need for a quorum?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Excellent, good. Just confirming that the audio is working and the video is pretty decent on your end.
Yep.
It's great on ours.
Good.
Excellent. All right.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah.
So, as a matter of the audio record, this is the official start of the Wasatch Front Regional Council Budget Committee. Today's date is March 12th, 2020. It's the beginning of our day. The time is currently 10:08 a.m. in the morning. And with a welcome and roll call of introductions, I am Sean Milne, your benevolent dictator of the Budget Committee. And to my left,
Bob Stevenson, Davis County Commission.
Jeff Scott, Wachilder County Commission.
We have joining us teleconference.
Love it.
Bob Gardner, Wasatch.
Excellent.
Mike Bennion, staff.
Ted Knowlton, staff.
Andrea Pearson, staff.
Andrew Gruber, also staff.
And do we have anybody else on the phone? We do expect a couple of folks to be able to call in. So with that, we don't have a quorum.
We do not have a quorum yet.
Mayor Silvestrini asked that we text
him.
I did. All of Mayor Silvestrini, Mayor Caldwell, Council Member Cannon, and Council Member Jensen have all said that they are going to be calling in. Aha! And here's Caldwell, which gives us our quorum.
Excellent.
Sorry.
Hi.
You are such a lifesaver. While you're standing, you want to do the prayer?
So we're just so
my
you know we're on the we're recording for the budget committee meeting, just so you know. Okay. Mayor Caldwell, go ahead.
It's
go
like
on
the
please.
Zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
So it's good shit.
University of San Francisco.
Yeah.
For how long? They're done. They canceled them all.
Canceled or went to online?
Online.
Yeah.
But they're trying to send everybody home.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody on campus. And I heard the governor just said they're going to
yes.
limit all events to 100 people or less.
And the all the universities in Utah, if I don't know if it's been announced yet, but are going to go to online classes. And
who did we have? Town halls you're having in the next little while.
we did one last night. We had quite a few people there. They mentioned that we were looking at probably just doing video type things, and these people said, no, don't keep having people come. I'm going, I don't want you here.
Yeah.
Who joined us on the phone?
Sorry, I got Tina.
Howdy. Glad that you're able to join us. Thank you. All right, so with that,
I'm going to mute, so guys, give me a moment to unmute when I need to come on, okay?
Duly noted, and we will. Thank you very much for being courteous with the background noise. All right, with that, our first action item is an approval of the minutes for the October 10th meeting.
I make a motion that we approve the minutes as written from the October 10th meeting.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Corrections, omissions, deletions? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Excellent. All right, and those things as unanimously passed. Now is the time that we will open the floor for anyone to make a comment. Seeing that there is no one that is a random member of the public here, is there anyone present that would like to speak? No, and just for formality's sake, is there anyone on the line that would like to speak during public comment? Hearing no one, we shall stand as closed on that. Now, the next one is an action item. On the recommendation that the council release the draft fiscal year 21 WFRC goals, budget, and unified work program, or the UPWP, for public comment. With that, I hope that everyone has had ample opportunity to review the packet that was provided to us via email. Is there anything that you would like to highlight, Mr. Executive Director? I think we're going to call everyone's attention to this first.
Yeah.
You want to say something?
I'm ready to give an overview of
perfect.
The Let's materials when and if you're ready.
I am.
Okay.
Please proceed.
Thank you very much. It's nice to see you all, or hear you all. Just briefly, I do want to note that some of us were talking about this a little bit before as we were assembling. It is entirely likely that all of us, including WFRC, are going to be converting to online meetings. I just want you all to know that we are preparing as an organization for doing online meetings, which in the near term would probably be just very simple conference calls, sort of action items only. If there was a need to do that for a more extended period of time, we would look into a more robust participation method for displaying information. And also, we'll of course make sure that there's always an opportunity for public participation. We're also preparing for the possibility that our employees will end up having to work from home remotely. So I imagine all of you are preparing for all of those things as well, but this is a really fast-moving situation we're monitoring closely. Having said that, the action, as our Budget Committee Chair discussed today, is something that we do every year. The Budget Committee reviews and then makes any modifications and then makes a recommendation to the Council for its meeting on March 26th of the fiscal year 21, we're on a July to June fiscal year 21 goals, budget, and work program for Wasatch Front Regional Council. Slightly different thing that we're doing this year than what we've done in the past is we're doing the goals, budget, and work program all at the same time. In previous years, we actually had the goals discussion later, and it just makes so much more sense to integrate all of those things together. So that's what we've got in front of you and was sent out in the materials to you. What I'd like to do is hit on some highlights of those items, the goals and the budget. As Commissioner Milton said, you have all the materials, and I want to thank Lovett and Wayne for doing a really thorough job of putting all these materials together and explaining everything, all the details and all the footnotes and everything. So I'm not inclined to go into a lot of detail. I'm going to hit highlights, but of course, as always, I'm happy to answer any questions and get any feedback that you all have. Okay?
I appreciate that very much. And again, just want to emphasize the use of the footnotes and the excellent work in doing that. It certainly helped me as I reviewed this in preparation for today's meeting, so that if I had questions about specific lines in the budgets, we had ample pages of those footnotes to give some narrative and hopefully to Chairman Stevenson's perspective, often noted, help abbreviate the length of these meetings. So thank you very much. I appreciate that, staff and Andrew.
Thank you. So as you noted a minute ago, what I want to do is turn your attention, if I can, to this list of proposed fiscal year 21 goals for WFRC. What you'll notice, if you recall what our current goals are, these four basic goals are essentially the same goals as what we have in place currently. This is not a surprise because there's a lot of continuity in the work that we do as an organization year to year. What you'll note is, you know, goal number one is the broad outreach with all of our partners for the overall Wasatch Choice regional vision for transportation, land use, and economic development, dealing with growth challenges. The second goal gets to our ongoing plans and programs and lists out the regional transportation plan, the TIP, the funding programs, etc. Those are things that we do on an ongoing basis. Goal three, subject matter expertise to federal, state, and local officials. I'll note to you that a big thing this year, 3A, is the need to reauthorize the federal transportation program, through which, importantly for our organization, the majority of our funding comes. We'll get into that in a few minutes when we talk about the budget. But then also sets important policy. Also in this goal is working with policymakers about infrastructure funding and financing, participating in major projects, etc. So that's that subject matter expertise that we provide. It ties into our mission statement on the wall right there of being a technical expert, subject matter experts for folks in our region. And then the fourth goal, striving for organizational excellence. You all may remember, and I remember Council Member Cannon, you had thought good comments on this last year about making sure we're putting upfront in those goals, ensuring accountability and transparency to our members in our policy making and the use of our budget. So we always endeavor to do that as well, of course. I'm going to come back, though, to goal number one. Goal number one shows under 1A, support local communities to update their plans for growth and development. This issue, the growth issue, the challenges of growth, community concerns, what sometimes is referred to, I think, derisively as NIMBYism. I like to think of it as community concern about growth issues. Infrastructure funding challenges that you all face, that we face as a region. This is the big issue for us as an organization, for us as a region. And our with the input you all have provided to us and our collaboration with all of our partners through the League of Cities and Towns, the Association of Counties, UDOT and UTA, et cetera, we think the big charge for the next year, and this is something we've already been working on, is helping communities to deal with these growth challenges. So you see that right there in the first bullet under 1A. So it's about supporting local communities as they integrate their local transportation, land use, housing, and economic development plans, aligning that with the broader Wasatch Choice regional vision, satisfying the statutory requirements from SB 34 and other legislation, and then managing funding challenges, particularly around infrastructure, all of them while addressing the community concerns. And my point in highlighting this to you all is that we believe as staff that this continues to be probably the sort of top focal point for us as an agency. I want to thank Mayor Silvestrini and Commissioner Stevenson for really pushing on this issue. We've had great dialogue about this at our meetings, but what we want to do with our partners is not just talk about it at WFRC, but really be outwardly focused in providing tools and resources to our communities. Ted has been coordinating with Regional Growth Committee, and if we have a meeting in person next week, next Thursday, that's going to be a focal point of that discussion. Some of the legislation that just passed unanimously on the House floor gives more opportunity for transit-oriented development. And so this is a big focal point for us as an agency. And so I wanted to highlight that to you. I'll pause there on the goals.
Are there any questions? Tina, we'll use this opportunity. Did Jeff come in?
No.
I didn't think I heard him come through.
Did we send him a text?
Yes.
Yeah, we did. Tina, do you have any questions or observations?
Ted and I had talked about this for the agenda next week because I'm chairing regional growth. So I think I agree with everything that's been said. We've got to start focusing on it and getting that word out just up the group and to our communities.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to go back.
Okay, thank you, Tina. Appreciate that. All right, then go ahead. Continue.
Good. I'm seeing nods. Yes. Here. Okay. So thank you. That's not an action, but it's just it's a sense to move forward. Okay. Now let me turn to the budget. All of you have been on the budget committee. This is not your first rodeo with the WFRC budget, so most of this will be familiar to you. What I'm going to suggest to you is that in the budget tables, you turn to the page that is labeled expenditure by function. The reason I'm suggesting you look at the expenditure by function page is that that is sort of the most commonly understood way of looking at a budget, and that it breaks out what we're actually spending our money on. So it says, if you're looking for it, it says right here in the, like sort of in the middle top, it says expenditure by function. Everybody with me there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. I want to highlight a few particular things to you, but first let me say this. There is nothing unusual or surprising in this year's budget. It is largely a continuation of the FY21 budget is largely a continuation of things that were put in place in the FY19 and FY20 budgets. So, as usual, The two largest line item expenditures in our budget are for salaries and employee benefits, one, and then contractual, two. And I want to give a little explanation about what you see in these lines for both of those line items. For our employees, what you see in FY19, that column is the actual spending, 3.5. The FY20, that is, at this point, Lovett's best estimate. And we think we're going to be pretty close on that number, right, Lovett? The 3.6, 3.7 number.
Yeah, I think that one is actually a very solid number.
Okay. And then FY21, you see about 4.3. Now, that 4.3 is an 18% increase over FY20, and I want to explain why that is. There's two things going on there. One, in FY20, we budgeted a few new positions in the organization. We had them budgeted for either the whole year or the majority of the year, but did not or have not filled all of those positions yet. So our spending came in a little bit lower in FY20. In FY21, we're budgeting the full year for all of those positions. So what you see is a bump up from 20 to 21 as we fill out the positions that we had talked about a year ago and budgeted for, and as we get to a full staffing complement of 30 people. That's,
and Andrew?
Yes.
It's also worth noting that we had a number of retirements this year and people who left to take other opportunities. So there was some turnover and that caused us to be short-staffed.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Thank you, Lovett. Just as an aside, I'm going to note that we're feeling really good about the team that we've got. We had a few people leave in positions, and they were really terrific, but it has given us an opportunity to look afresh and bring in new folks who are bringing just really terrific skills. So I was going to say, honestly, I feel like we may have the strongest team in WFRC that we've had in the entire time that I've been here, and not a moment too soon with all the challenges that we've got facing us.
That includes all of us in this room and on the phone, is that right?
Of course it does. Of course it does. It's a very inclusive statement, super strong team. In that salary employee benefits line item, the other thing that's at play in that line item increase is there's 5% increase, which functions as a cap for us to do any employee salary adjustments, COLA or merit increases, and cover modifications to our group health insurance and any other benefits. So you all, I think, will probably remember that we've taken this approach for many years. We budget for 5%. That does not mean we use all of it or that we have to use all of it, but it gives me then and our team the flexibility to administer that and navigate with benefit changes or anything that comes. So those are the two things that play in that line.
So can I just add?
Yeah, please.
I think the one thing which I think we have been very smart in the past, we just need to always remember the lessons that were learned from UTA a number of years ago, that we're able to public-wise, still show that we're not out of control. So
I totally agree.
Well, 5% for salaries and health insurance is extremely conservative. I mean, we see 7 to 10 proposals all the time for just health insurance. So.
Yeah. The thing that's nice is that our health insurance may go up by more than 5%. But because the 5% functions on the entire line, we can absorb a health insurance increase of more than 5% as long as our employee cost increases are less than 5%. So Lovett and I work carefully to watch all of this and make sure that we come in under that 5%. I agree with Commissioner Stevenson with your point wholeheartedly. At the same time, it's a tight labor market, or at least it has been, which puts pressure on salaries. And so we have to strike a right balance between having salaries that are appropriate and benefits that are appropriate for the public sector, but then also being able to compete so that we can have good people. So it's always that balance that we're trying to strike. Okay. Moving on, the next line item I want to focus on is contractual. This is the line item that actually has the most action going on in it, but it was all by plan and design, so there's no surprises in what's going on here. If you look at FY19, $1.3 million, FY20, $4.7 million, and FY21, $3.1 million. Now, what I want to note about that $4.7 million number, that number, it's in an estimated column, but it's a little different than the other estimates. As Lovett has worked through all of this, the estimates for all of the other items are pretty close to what we really believe our spending will be in FY20. The contractual line item is a little bit different. That $4.7 million number is more closer to what we've got budgeted for contractual rather than what we actually anticipate will be spent in that line item. The reason for that, and again, this is something that we had planned for and we have seen year after year, is that we carry forward contracts that are budgeted in 1 year, but that stretch over multiple fiscal years. So contracts that were budgeted, the full amount was budgeted in FY19, but did not finish in FY19, we carry them into FY20. So you're seeing actually a bunch of stuff from 19 pulled into 20. That's why that number is so high. Now, most notably, that includes our TLC, Transportation and Land Use Connection program, which has been growing, again, by design, with additional contributions from our partners, Salt Lake County, UTA, and our own contributions from our Federal Surface Transportation Program, or STP plan. So that program has been very successful. We've been growing it in a managed and intentional way, but that's what you see happening in that jump from 19 to 20. Now, we will have a better sense in May, when we come back on the budget, of what our estimated spending will be. So what we are anticipating, love it, is that that $4.7 million, a significant chunk of that, will also push into 21. So we'll need to make an adjustment. Right now, we didn't want to do a guesstimate. It's at 4.7, and then the budget amount for 21 is 3.5. We will probably, when we get to final budget, need to adjust those numbers. And then, in fact, in October, as we always do, when we do the full reconciliation for the previous fiscal year, we'll need to see how that played out and make a tweak again in that area. But just because the numbers are large and variable, I wanted to do a little bit of a walkthrough on that, but all by design and anticipated. So I'll pause there. Are there any comments or questions?
Tina, any other thoughts?
I'm good.
Okay, thank you. All right. Thanks, Andrew.
The only other thing, I'm getting there, I'm almost done. The only other thing on contractual that I want to note is we are having a conversation internally among our team that recognizes that, as I said before, we are fully staffed right now. And so we're looking at what is the right balance of work done in-house and work that is contracted out. And we are looking for opportunities to bend down the amount of money that we're using on consultants and rely a little more on our in-house and really talented staff as a matter of encouraging our staff and their growth, and then also saving on costs. Because I think it's challenging to have full staff and full consulting budget. We gotta be prudent about the use of resources. Having said that, so we're undergoing that process right now, and so that may have some bearing on ultimately where we get to in May for the budget for 20 and for 21 on consultants. Okay? Okay. The only other item I just want to briefly note in the budget is the item that's labeled rent. This is the item that reflects the really great work that the budget committee did in collaboration with us on the move to this office here. You see FY19, that's the, obviously mainly in the old office. FY20 is here in the new office. FY21 is a full 12 months. What you see a growth from 20 to 21 of 6%. I want to briefly explain that. Our actual year-to-year growth, once we're all costs in, is 3%. We negotiated a fixed 3%. So a portion of that 6% growth from 20 to 21 is that 3%. However, in 20, we did not have 12 months of fully amortized T&I costs. We were still doing some of the tenant improvements. Once all of those were done, those T&I costs were put into the full budget. So what you're seeing in 20 is the final costs. So it's just that pickup of that full T&I that shows a little bit of the increase from 20 to 21, but then going forward, it'll be a 3%, okay? I also want to note to you that we are thinking and are going to start investigating the possibility. We have a 10-year lease. We're going to investigate the possibility of a lease extension way ahead of time. Because as everything looks in this market, we might be in a situation at the end of a 10-year lease term that the market rate is way above what we're paying. And I don't anticipate us wanting to move out of this space 9 or 8 years from now. We have a real...
It feels like it's gone really well.
Yeah.
In this space.
Yeah,
I think it's terrific. People that come in...
Are you going to have enough room if you have to expand more people?
That's the... You know, I'll tell you what, Commissioner, that's the only thing that gives me some pause is that we don't have... We have very limited expansion room here within our footprint. There is the possibility of negotiating a lease for more space in this facility. So that is an issue that could be an issue 2 years from now, 5 years from now. We have the ability under our lease right now to sublease the space. So we can still do that. If we pushed our lease term by another, whatever, 5 years, let's say, I think it doesn't materially change the issue that you're raising, but we'd still be able to sublease. What I'm worried about is getting to a point 8 years from now where maybe we don't have as good a relationship with our landlord as we do right now. We have a very, very positive relationship with our landlord, and we might be priced out. So what I'm inclined to do is investigate, and we've already started looking into this, the possibility of an extension, which, if we do that, that gives value to the landlord. And also we could potentially use to renegotiate our escalator. We're at 3%. Maybe we can bring that down to whatever, 2.75 or 2.5 or something. So I will stay in touch with you about that, but I just wanted to let you know and make sure you guys are comfortable with just us investigating that possibility.
Very comfortable if you're asking.
Okay.
I as well.
It's a thought.
I think it's good timing. It covers both ends of it. If there is a quick recovery and things, take off,
yeah,
you might be able to get a lower escalator. If it is a little prolonged, maybe they give you some concessions as well.
Maybe.
So who's just straight south of you?
Straight south?
Central Wasatch Commission.
Oh, Central Wasatch Commission. Yeah.
Any chance they would be, maybe?
They just moved in. I don't know.
How many employees do they have?
Four. Uh-huh.
Is that Ralph Becker?
Ralph Becker. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I guess I have.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's obviously a lot of other stuff in the budget, but it's otherwise, other than what I've talked about, it's pretty routine. I always note this, the one big uncertainty is the fact that the majority of our budget comes from federal sources, and as such, there is a risk if something happens with the federal budget. I don't think that's going to happen, but this is the year that we do a new reauthorization bill. I'd love it if what actually ends up happening is there's additional resources for our operations and for projects and programs in the region, but we can't count on that. We'll be working on that actively and keeping you all up to date about those activities. But that's the budget for this year, and obviously I'm happy to answer any questions.
I don't have any further. I admit that I've already had an opportunity to amply go through this. I don't hear of any here.
Okay. And then the other thing that you've got in your packet, which I'm actually not going to talk about.
Before we move on, was there something you want to say, Wayne?
Just quick.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you're going here or not, but it's been 10 years since we've conducted a household travel survey, which is critical for
the defensibility and usability of the travel demand model, which is key on many both transit and highway environmental studies, as well as corridor analyses. And so one item of note, for both FY21 and FY22, there's $1 million each year anticipated contractual expenses for conducting a statewide travel household or household travel survey. That $1 million each year is 377 of surface transportation program funds, WFRC's surface transportation program funds. The other 622 of that, 623, is from UDOT, UTA, and the other MPOs in the state.
Thank you. Appreciate your bringing that up, Wayne. What I should have done is, before jumping off the budget, I was going to hit quickly on the work program and then turn to the rest of our team to see if there's anything else that you want to add. The work program, which is also in your packet, is a required federal, required by the federal government that we produce a detailed report on all of the things that we anticipate working on. We develop that in coordinate or in consultation with UDOT and UTA. Wayne is the point person on putting that together. So you have that summary of that work program. I'm not going to go through it, but suffice to say that Wayne and Lovett are really careful to make sure that all of our programs and our activities are consistent with all the requirements of federal law and other rules and requirements. Do you want to say anything about the work program other than that? Okay. Lovett, what would you like to add, if anything, to the discussion about the budget?
Extensively, you and I have gone back and forth over footnotes and what numbers should be in there. We've consulted with the staff about what our needs are going to look like next year. We base a lot of our budget on what we did the year before, plus we look ahead what needs to happen in the future. That's how that budget is created. There are a lot of folks that work on it and contribute to it, and hopefully we get it as close as we can and as realistic as we can, and that's all I've got to say.
Okay, thank you. Ted, is there anything you want to add?
No.
Andrea?
No.
Okay, that's it for our discussion on this action item, Mr. Budget Committee Chair.
All right, so gentlemen and lady, we have the action before us is to approve for recommending to the council the release of the draft fiscal year 21 WFRC goals, budget, and the unified planning work program for public comment. Is there a motion?
I would make that motion.
I would second that.
There is a motion to approve for release to, well, of those elements that I've just noted. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Tina? Well, we need her for the quorum.
No, you have a quorum.
Okay,
we have
it. Okay.
Oh, excellent.
There you go.
Thank you.
She voted yes 3 times, so that's great. Thank you.
Excellent. All right, so the next is an informational item, and is the executive director's
report. Oh, great, I get to keep talking.
Just a second.
Hey, but it's only 10:40.
Attorney, paid by the word, we know.
Okay. I have two things I want to just discuss briefly. One of them is long-term financial stability for Wasatch Front Regional Council, and then two is an update on our work searching for a new CFO. First, long-term fiscal stability. It is, of course, a prudent thing to do for any organization to look out not just 1 year, but look out multiple years into the future at expenses and revenues and make sure that we're stable for the long term. I was thinking about this the other day and trying to think if any of you, and I didn't go back and check this, if any of you were actually on the budget committee in 2014 when... Maybe you were?
I think I was.
I think you were. When we last did an extensive, or thorough, I should say, review of our long-term finances, and recognized there was a basic reality to our financial situation, which was that our expenses were growing faster than our revenues, which creates, over the course of time, a gap. Collectively, and particularly with the Budget Committee, we took several actions to address that issue. Those actions included increasing the county contributions to WFRC and then indexing them to inflation, which, by the way, is part of the budget this year, 2.1% projected increase based on 3-year look back of CPI. Does somebody just join us?
That might have been.
Which may have just lost. Okay. We increased the state contribution that comes to us. We increased the amount of the portion of our federal STP funds that we use to pay for some of our administrative costs, and we looked at cost-saving measures. So we did all of those things and significantly adjusted both the revenue side and bent the cost side down some, and that was very successful. Right now, we decided that it would make sense to take another look at this, and we're in good shape. However, we still have this fundamental issue that our costs grow faster than our revenues do. So what we're doing is a process internally of looking out for at least a 5-year period, looking at our revenue sources and identifying some options that we might take to make sure that we don't have this sort of downward issue where we have a gap between our costs and our revenues, which over the long term is problematic. I'm bringing this up now, not because there's anything to do on it today, but to tell you that it's our desire to have a conversation with you as the Budget Committee about this issue. We'll put some information together, bring it back to you, look at the financial picture, look at some options we can consider, and get your guidance, your partnership, if there's some actions that we need to take to make sure that we have that long-term financial stability.
Just guessing, if you were to take 5 years from now, in 25 or 26, how much more money do you figure we would need? Get the figure in your mind.
In 1 year or over the aggregate?
5 years.
Over the aggregate period?
Well, no. I'm just saying that once we get comparing this year to, say, 2025 or 2026, how much difference as far as the expenses you believe are going to change, or how much more revenue do we need
on
an annual basis? Would the technical answer require that you adjust for that CPI measure that's already built in?
So beyond that?
Yeah, I'll talk about that.
Yeah. I'll answer that question and note to you that we've already been putting together some of this material, although we don't have, it's not ready. I mean, we're not ready to actually sort of present it and talk about it. But if I recall correctly, in FY25, if everything stays as it is right now, we have a gap, which is like $600,000. And we have no gap for next year.
Do you but think then we can get it out of education?
Ha ha ha, very funny. So I guess that's the answer to your question.
Yeah.
And so what we want to do is come back to you and show you, hey, here's all of this all this info, and what are the options to take there? The thing I mentioned before about bending down on consultant contracts, like that's an example of, well, let's plan to do a little bit less, and then that shaves off some money on that. And if we can bring in some additional revenues in some ways, then that just sort of brings those lines together, which is what we're looking to do. Okay? So thanks in advance for your help on that. Okay. Last thing is an update. I emailed all of you the cover letter, resume, and references for our leading candidate for CFO, that, as you all know, Lovett announced her retirement, which is happening in January of 21. And I'll just say again how much we incredibly appreciate Lovett's willingness to work through this period, continue on this work, and then help have an overlap with, and actually the overlap was Lovett's really good idea, to make sure we have a smooth transition. We've identified a leading candidate. Again, I sent her resume. Her name is Stacy Waite. She works right now at Utah Community Action. I want to thank Commissioner Scott, who participated with us through the entire process of reviewing resumes, doing interviews, et cetera. It was so great that you were willing to help us in that way. And I'll just say, we all feel the interview committee, which includes Lovett, Wayne, myself, Ned, Commissioner Scott, feel really positively about Stacy. I don't know whether we're going to be able to make that work out in terms of salary requirements, et cetera. But my inclination is to make an offer to her for the position. But before doing so, I had sent you her resume and cover letter and everything, her references, check out, all of that stuff. But I just wanted to check in with you. I'll note, technically, this is my decision as executive director, but particularly given the importance and nature of this position, I wanted to, before making a decision, wanted to consult with the budget committee and just see if there's any questions or concerns or anything.
I have one question.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Lovett, how many years have you worked for us?
It will be going on 25 years.
So why, you know, with your talents, why have you stayed here 25 years?
You know, I feel like when I came here, I found a home here. I liked the mission of the organization. I liked the people I worked with. The benefits were good. Probably the best benefit is it allowed me to be they treated me like a human being with a family and accepted that, you know, as a whole person, which a lot of employers don't. So I would say it was the culture, the...
It's a whole package in a sense.
Yeah, it was everything.
So my concern on reading her resume and that was whether she would stay. And I mean, I know you can't turn around, but I was more concerned, would this person still be here 5 years from now?
Yeah.
And that's a concern, and that's why, you know, and maybe if whomever the person is comes in, learns just exactly what you just said there, that becomes important and that
is happening. I do think that there is a change in the workforce generally, that people don't stay as long, same jobs as, and heaven help me if I'm stepping over a politically incorrect line, but I think people in my generation tended to appreciate the stability, and we weren't, you know, as interested in job hopping as in making your situation today work. So, you know, I hear what you're saying. And Andrew and I have actually had that conversation. What happens if they don't stay?
That means we're gonna have to call you up and have you come back for another year to teach the next person.
You'll have to find me on a beach in Bermuda somewhere.
Challenge accepted if I've got the right budget.
Seriously, and hopefully I'm not overstepping this, Andrew. Seriously, I think this organization should think about having more than one person in an accounting position where, if that were to happen, you've got a plan B in place.
Yeah.
Those things cost money, and honestly, you know, that might be an issue, being able to afford that. But I think ongoing is something you ought to think about, because it can't just be one person who knows where those particular bodies are buried. You need to have a little more.
Figuratively.
Lovett.
I've buried a lot of bodies in my time.
Lovett, you're not overstepping at all. I mean, it's actually really good advice. And Commissioner Stevenson, I have that concern as well. I think to Lovett's point, it's hard to hire anybody for any position at this point and think and you know, and feel like you have anything approaching a guarantee that they're going to be around for more than 5 years. So I think that's why Lovett's point actually is a really important one. We can hire the best person, but have to plan for the possibility that person leaves. And we don't have somebody who's going to stay for 25 years and then be magnanimous enough to say, I'm going to give you a year's notice and overlap to make sure there's smooth transition. We have to plan for that not happening. And it may be that Lovett's suggestion is the principal way we handle that is by having some overlap in, or I don't know if it's redundancy, but sharing of, more sharing of responsibilities around accounting functions and everything. So,
well, we believe that in every organization, right? We have chief deputies or assistant director or assistant to the regional manager for a reason. thank you. Somebody got the reference. for a reason.
Yeah.
Because even at the very top, we realize, I mean, we're all in that executive decision, right. You know, capacity. We get it. And it is more expensive. But this takes me back to 2 weeks ago at the National Association of Counties Conference. I sit on a board that discusses workforce development. And there was a lot of emphasis, it seemed, this conference about professional development of your employees. And Lovett, I may be projecting here, but I think she kind of insinuated that as a whole person, you feel as though you're valued. And we know that that's fairly rare, and particularly in corporate. It's very rare if you're a publicly traded company because it's usually about dividends and profits. And if you develop your employees, so I had the opportunity to be in a session where this very element was discussed, because every generation that's too removed from the youthful generation coming into the workforce has always mocked them for their work ethic.
Right.
And all of us can probably remember us being that 20-something, where two generations above us were kind of mocking us for our work ethic. And that the millennials, you know, to use the catchphrase that encapsulates the 20-somethings, are really no different. They'll accept a job of lower wage if it has a flexible schedule. So again, treating them as a whole person that has, you know, different priorities than just living to work, and develops them. And so professional development may be a different kind of benefit than just a 401k or a pension plan. But if you do that and you invest in your employees, the discussion in the panel shifted in a weird sort of way that there's an inverse relationship between how much more you typically invest in your employee and their propensity to stay, even though you're making them more attractive to go somewhere else.
Huh, that's interesting.
And it was just an interesting kind of, you know, what if that was thrown out there during an hour and a half kind of session, as you would expect at any conference. So that just might be something for us to consider, since there seemed to have been so much emphasis, at least in the track that I attended during the week, towards workforce development, that's not really all that different for millennials.
Yeah.
The work scheduling and how they want to work may be the biggest difference that's, you know, different for most of us. But really, the other elements are not so much.
And that's a competitive advantage we can have in the public sector that they won't have in the private. So I agree, and I appreciate Lovett's comments that the culture is what kept her here. And you may be able to go make a little bit more money, but you don't have a better lifestyle. So that's props to you.
Thanks. You know, I've been in this job 4 years longer than any other job I've ever had, too. So there's a reason for that. So
a place where people go to die, Wasatch Front.
Terrific. And
you're
on that
really
note,
good at numbers, but we're not going to hire you for the marketing slogans.
Yeah, keep your day job. You're not our marketing and communications person. Love it.
Okay.
So I guess technically we're still in my executive director's report.
Yes, sir.
And I guess I'm just looking around, not for approval or for you know, action or whatever, but just, are you all okay if moving ahead in this direction?
Sure.
Yes. Okay.
I think you need to.
There was a pretty clear line as we did these interviews. There were a couple of people that just really, really stood out. And after the phone interviews, it was pretty evident who the final candidates would be. And after doing the live interviews, you know, here, Stacy really kind of rose up. There was one other candidate that was pretty good, but she's sharp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Lovett took her through her paces too. I mean, you know, asked her all the real tough questions to confirm. Like, yeah, she doesn't just present well; she actually really knows her stuff. So that was
been
good.
There, done that. Yeah, she knows her stuff.
Okay, so we'll keep you all posted. you know, hopefully we can make that happen, and we'll keep you posted. And obviously, if that's the case, we'll have a, you'll all get to meet her, and she'll be engaged. So, Mr. Budget Committee Chair, that concludes my executive director's report.
Excellent. Well, are there any other questions among board members?
I just have one more. Do you know what the approximate balance is in the kind of dedicated fund from the sale of the building? Do you know about how much is there currently?
Love it.
Yes, it's just under $1,160,000, I think, right now.
Okay.
Yeah, and just so you know, that number is actually, it's somewhere in here. It's in the budget materials. We show that balance. Where the heck do we show that? Love it.
What's shown there is the change, not the actual fund balance.
Oh, that's right. I'm thinking about that other sheet that we have. Fair enough.
Excuse me, just a couple of minutes. I should be able to give you that exact number.
Yeah. So I think he's okay. It's like Lovett said, you know, million one, something like that. Which, go on.
No, that's cool, because I mean, this is more of a budget and an expense. And
correct.
That was more of a balance sheet item. And so.
Yeah, and we still, I mean, just to that point, as a reminder, we have that. It's in that dedicated building fund. And the notion there is that we didn't want to take the value of the asset that we had and then just roll it into our operations and then it flitters away.
Yeah.
We, through your direction, we put that into a dedicated fund with the idea that we might at some point in the future move to buy something. We're not on track to do that. So we're going to have to, at some point, like love it. I don't imagine we sit on that money indefinitely. With the action of the council, that money can be liberated to be used for other things, but we're going to want to be real careful about that.
And
so,
principle.
Yeah, so I'm not... Yeah.
I was going to say, the council has full control over that balance.
Right.
The exact balance, by the way, is $1,151,000.
Yeah. And I would just as soon...
As of the end of January.
...not do anything.
No,
for now.
Oh,
for a while on that, and let's reassess that maybe once a year and see where we are.
That's a luxury to have a little bit of a cushion.
Yeah.
I agree 100%.
Okay.
I'm smirking because I made that proposal, and I remember Tom Dolan and Jensen. I'm grateful for the support that we had, but I'm a big believer. It's probably a lot because of my paranoia on how I got elected to county leadership and what my county at that particular time was going through, but... It's a lot easier to recover when you've got an actual savings account than when you don't. And when we're talking about the value of staffing, and we've already, you know, acknowledged that much like our own operations at home, salaries and wages are your top expense. If you need to slash and burn, that's where you have to go if you don't have a savings.
Right.
And so.
And if we get cut off from federal funds, if there's a, you know, a temporary, like 6 months, there's no federal budget for us, and I mean. It provides us a little bit of security so we don't have to, you know, disrupt the lives of our amazing people here.
Yeah.
So
I'm really tickled to hear y'all say that. Thank you very much.
I'm super supportive of
thank you.
Keeping that in there, and let's just see how it goes.
Okay.
Any other comments by committee members?
I think you look very nice today.
Nice.
Appreciate your...
Particularly the pocket square and the tie. That's
right. I'm a believer in one or the other.
I usually am as well.
If you had seen the last two Thursday morning meetings, yeah. You'd understand.
Yeah, he's giving me quite the ribbing here for the whole session. All right, well, if there's nothing else, then I just want to reiterate that our next meeting is May 14th, 2020. And with one final
just to make sure we're all clear, I think we are now going to send these materials as part of the council packet. We will have this discussion at the council meeting, either in person or on the phone. Some appropriately brief tag teaming between the budget committee chair and me about these materials, and then the action at the council meeting will be to vote to release them for public comment. We put them out, we send them electronically to all the COGs, solicit any input, and then we come back in May with the budget committee meeting as necessary with any updates, and then final action by the council at the May meeting.
Perfect. Seem to have everybody in agreement.
Good.
And Tina, just to make sure, you are not on the phone any longer, correct? All right. Fair enough. Well, one final motion.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Excellent. Thank you very much, everybody.